From WGBH in Boston, you're listening to Ground Truth, human stories from the front lines.
On the outskirts of Kabul, in the village of Desobz, Afghanistan, a woman named Hawa is filling a teacup with water from a well. Hawa is the principal of a girls' school, the Zabuli Education Center. She drinks. Then she walks around the dirt courtyard with her empty cup. Hawa waits to see what happens.
I'm scared because I've heard about the schools where the water was poisoned and students were hurt. So I test the water on myself.
When she knows the water is safe for her students, she thanks God and goes back inside.
I have to be careful because our school is well known in Desobz and all over Afghanistan. If the water is poisoned, I'm just one person. Better me than 400 students.
Education has become a reality for some 2 million Afghan girls. But the return of the Taliban puts all this progress at risk. In September, the Taliban took control of an Afghan city for the first time since 2001, and they've never stopped attacking girls' schools. In August, they used poison gas. 300 girls were hospitalized. And beyond these attacks, there are other threats to girls' education, closer to home. Girls often lack the support of their families, especially the men, in a very traditional culture. I'm Charlie Sennett, the founder of the Ground Truth Project. On this episode of the podcast, we go inside one of these girls' schools. Beth Murphy, director of Ground Truth Films, has spent a year documenting daily life in the Zabuli school for a feature documentary film. Just one quick note before our story gets started. Beth began as an outsider in the Zabuli school, but she got to know and care about its students. And after she finished her documentary, she helped raise funds for a local women's college. We'll tell you more about that at the end of today's show. Here's Beth.
It wasn't always so hard for young women to get an education in Afghanistan. Just a few decades ago, Hawa wouldn't have needed to test the water. The Zabuli Education Center wouldn't have been a big deal. But today, it's revolutionary.
The day before we were opening the school, some men came inside and said, please make it into a boys' school because the boys are the backbone of Afghanistan. And I said, well, you know that the women are eyesight of Afghanistan. And I said, unfortunately, you all are blind.
That's Razia Jan. Without her, the Zabuli school wouldn't exist.
Growing up in Afghanistan at the time that I grew up was beautiful. You didn't have to wear a burqa. You could go freely anywhere. I used to ride a bike when I was young. Then Kabul was a city that they called Paris of the Middle East.
Razia grew up in the 1950s in southern Afghanistan. She's a 72-year-old grandmother, short, a little stocky. She has curly hair. She refuses to wear the burqa, but she loves wearing really colorful and ornate headscarves. Razia came to the U.S. in 1970, and she always planned to go back home. But after the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, her friends at home told her, don't come back. She didn't return until 2002.
Once America invaded Afghanistan, I could go there, and I went and started to work with some orphanages, and working there made me see how terrible these children are treated, mostly the girls. When you give something, a doll or a scarf to a girl, when she walks away from you, the boy would snatch it and run away. And it happened time and time over again.
Razia was shocked to see how much the treatment of girls had worsened since she was a kid. But she believed change could happen, and that education was the key. It's a bright morning in 2007. Razia's standing on this mound of dirt. She's in a vacant lot that until very recently was a garbage dump. The Zabuli Education Center's groundbreaking was not a grand event.
was full of filth, and it's January, and I'm freezing to death, and I'm standing there waiting for an engineer. And so many men, they asked me, they said, "Sister," not looking at me, but, "Sister, what are you doing here? Why don't you go inside? This is my home. Sit with my wife, have a cup of tea, and we'll wait for the engineer." And I, every time I said, no, I have to be here. The reason I chose that village is that these were not terrorists. They were Mujahideen who fought the Taliban, but they are very conservative people.
To raise money for a girls' school, Razia worked for almost 2 years with her local Rotary Club back in Massachusetts. Then, thanks to some family connections to the Afghan government, she acquired land from the Ministry of Education. The land was actually the ruins of a boys' school, destroyed by decades of war.
The first day we started the school, the elders thought that we will be a failure and we will pack up our bags and leave so they can make it into a boys' school. They were yelling at me and shouting from the very first day, "Make it into a boys' school, make it into a boys' school."
Razia didn't budge. She wanted the school to be a safe space for girls. And at a lot of co-ed schools in Afghanistan, girls are bullied by the boys. Razia's fundraising efforts in the U.S. meant her school was free to attend. It opened as the only free private primary school in the country. 100 girls enrolled the first year. The parents were letting their daughters go to school for the first time. But parents were scared, too, and with good reason.
Fear is spreading among Afghan schoolgirls following a series of vicious attacks. This 14-year-old's face was badly burned after two men on a motorbike squirted acid from a water bottle.
Each individual attack spreads fear. But the year the school opened, there were just so many. 670 separate attacks. Arson, grenades, poison gas.
You cannot stop. If somebody tries to destroy you, you cannot stop. You have to pick up the ashes and go forward and try to build something.
Every morning, the whole school comes together to sing the national anthem. Here's something that might surprise you. The biggest threat to their education, it's not a bomb. It's a marriage. The voice you're hearing belongs to a girl named Pashtana. When I recorded this, she was 15 and she was standing in a classroom full of teenage girls. She was drawing a man's face on the chalkboard. He had distorted features and giant teeth. She was drawing her fiancé. Pashtana was wearing dark eyeliner and a sloppy headscarf. She's kind of a hooligan. School was a place Pashtana escaped to.
I love being in school, studying and laughing with my friends. When I'm here, I feel the most at peace. I finish my chores early in the morning and late at night. The rest of the time, I just want to be at school.
Back at home, Pashtana and her mother and siblings were often cold and hungry. Her father was abusive. Pashtana's mother never learned to read.
The best way I can help my mother with her problems is to graduate as soon as possible. But I'm worried there are people around me who will try to stop me. I'll go crazy if I can't graduate.
I soon learned that Pashtana's father was planning to marry Pashtana off to his brother's son. That fiancé she drew on the chalkboard? That was her first cousin. Pashtana's fiancé, like her father, disapproved of girls' education. In fact, he didn't think much of education in general and recently dropped out of high school himself. Later that month, I visited Pashtana and her family. Their entire house had three rooms. The downstairs was almost empty, just dirt floors and a red plastic water jug that they used as a sink. We went upstairs to the one room they used for sleeping, eating, getting dressed, doing homework. We sat on the carpet, and I recorded this conversation between Pashtana and her mother.
On my way to school, Uncle Maon stopped me and told me to wear the burqa. He said school is no good for me. What should I say to him?
Ignore him. Just focus on your studies. I don't want you to end up like me, blind to everything happening in the world. As long as I am alive, I won't let anyone stop you. It doesn't matter what your uncle says. I registered you with the blood of my heart. It's a great school.
Even with support from Pashtana's mother, the engagement was getting in the way of school. There were fights in the family. Many days she was forced to stay home. Pashtana's teachers tried to support her, but no one dared question the engagement. Not even Razia would cross that line. Razia had a plan to keep her students in school, but it didn't start with the girls. It actually started with their fathers. Here's the advice Razia has for teachers.
Try to teach each girl to write her father's name, both in Dari and in English, the first day when they come to school. And when they go home, they'll show their fathers, "I can write your name."
I'll just cut to the chase here. It worked. Here's how Razia described one of the fathers at a school meeting.
I swear to God, the guy came and he was crying. He said, "I don't know how to write my name. I put my thumb on everything. And my four-year-old girl knows how to write my name."
Teaching girls to write their father's name was just the start of Razia's diplomatic offensive. She also donated books to the local madrasa, or religious school, that's just across the street. She distributed food during the holidays. And at meetings, when the fathers of students spoke, she listened. Here's one meeting from 2009. Razia is sitting in the center of the room, surrounded by the village elders.
Razia-John, can you add 3 more classes after school for boys up to age 10?
First, you have to guarantee me that this school will not fall apart.
Razia was diplomatic. She basically told the men, "If you help me, I'll try to help you." She didn't add those boys' classes. Her aim was to help Afghan girls. But meetings like this opened up a conversation with the men, and over time they've come to feel a real stake in the school's success and its safety. Whether they're security guards or shopkeepers, local men keep watch over the Zabuli school. And to this day, it has never been attacked. There was one night in the fall of 2013 when Pashtana got into an argument with her uncle, who was also her fiancé's father. He beat her, and he told her she wouldn't be going to school anymore. The next morning, Pashtana left her house. She was at school before 8 a.m. But that day, Pashtana's teacher sensed that something wasn't right. She looked weak and seemed disoriented. In the middle of a class, she passed out. Unconscious, she was rushed to a hospital in Kabul. She was temporarily paralyzed, and it took 4 weeks for her to recover. Slowly, the teachers pieced together what had happened. Before coming to school that morning, Pashtana had taken a bar of soap from her house. She brought it to a shopkeeper, and she traded it for a box of rat poison.
Pashtana, it's a problem for us that you ate poison and came to school.
That's the voice of the school headmaster. His name is Zia.
Tell me exactly what happened from the beginning.
My uncle told me I couldn't go to school. I'll do anything, I told him. I'll even wear the burqa if you want me to. When I said this, they started beating me. I ate the poison because I knew they'd never let me go back to school.
You should know what you did creates problems for us and for the school. Today it's you, tomorrow it's a different girl. It's bad for the reputation of our school.
I was expecting Zia to be sympathetic, to comfort Pashtana, console her, but he wasn't doing any of that. In fact, he was scolding her.
There are girls in 7th, 8th and 9th grades who are engaged, and I know they don't like their fiancés either. Now they may go in the bathroom and hang themselves and die. That would destroy our reputation in this village. I don't need students like that here.
Please, Honorable Headmaster, I won't do it in the future. I'm so sorry. I will never do this again. I'll ask my family to come in. I'll ask my mother. Please, don't expel me.
Tomorrow, your brother must come to school and talk to me in person. You must guarantee me that you will never do this again. You can go now.
His tough response really shocked me at first. But then I started to understand that he was afraid. The school was already fragile. And if a student committed suicide, whatever the reason, it could jeopardize all the goodwill that Razia was building up. Or worse, it could set an example for other girls. It's a complicated balancing act. Here's Razia.
What I've done is, when they get engaged, we can't do anything because it's a cousin or whatever it is. And then I go to their house and talk to the family. And a lot of time when they have a celebration of the engagement, I speak to the in-laws too. And I say, well, could you wait a year for her to graduate?
One day I followed Razia while she visited a class of 9th graders. She wanted to tell them a story about another girl who tried to get an education.
I just came back from London. I went and I visited Malala. She is a girl from Pakistan, something just like you all. She was going to school on a bus, and on the way, two guys stopped the van and asked, "Who's Malala?" Nobody spoke. They were so afraid. But unfortunately, they looked at her, and the guy knew exactly who was Malala, and he shot her. The reason that she was shot was that she wanted to be educated. She wanted to be free. She wanted to have the right to laugh, to speak. These men didn't like that. You all are in the same boat as she is. But you have changed your life. Studying is not a sin. Nobody has the right to prevent a girl from getting education.
In October 2013, a representative from the Afghan Ministry of Education drove out to visit the school. A cloud of dust followed his little car. He wore a suit jacket, and he was smiling. He was carrying a letter from the Ministry of Education, and it was good news. He told the students their school was the only one in the district with running water and modern toilets. And the girls had done so well on their exams that the school was now ranked number one in academic excellence. The moment the students heard this, they were smiling, clapping, just beaming with pride. Their school, which had been the village garbage dump, was now the best in the area. Pashtana stopped showing up at school this year. We wanted to know what happened. What kept a hopeful 17-year-old from attending the school she cared so much about? For years, Pashtana's uncle had threatened to force her to drop out. And some teachers told me that he had finally gotten his way, that her mother had just gotten tired of fighting him to keep Pashtana in school. But another source told me that it was actually Pashtana's mother who decided to pull her out, that she was upset with a teacher who disciplined Pashtana for being disrespectful. We can't be sure what really happened. What I do know is that Pashtana got married a few weeks ago to that same fiancé she drew on the blackboard. She hasn't come back to school. But Razia has hope. even for Pashtana. Give her 10 years, Razia told me recently. We'll see her again, and she'll be a leader. In 2000, Afghan girls weren't even allowed to go to school. In 2010, despite all the challenges, there were around 2 million Afghan girls in school. A lot can change in 10 years.
I have hope, of course, one step at a time. It's a hard way, it's not easy. It's like breaking ice and making a pathway between it. So this is what we are trying to do. And slowly, slowly, we're chipping away that ice that we thought we could never crack it or open it or break it.
On December 12, 2015, the first class of girls graduated from the Zabuli school.
Today is a very special day for us. It's beyond my thought, beyond my dreams, that we will be sitting here with our first graduating class.
Beth was there, and it was a big milestone for the community. But the girls were wondering, what's next for them? So Razia suggested the construction of a new community college. Beth and Nate Toby, our podcast producer, helped Razia's foundation organize this effort and its crowdfunding campaign. The funds will be used to build the community college, which will specialize in nursing, a big need for women in Afghanistan, and a path to employment and better health for the wider community around the school. They broke ground in the fall, and construction is underway. This episode of Ground Truth was produced by Nathan Toby, Daniel Gross, Beth Murphy, and Amy Padula, with sound design by Brendan Brown and production assistance from Nathan Tisdale. Special thanks to the students and staff of the Zabuli Education Center, as well as our voice actors. We also want to thank WGBH's Tom Devlin, Gary Mott, and General Manager Phil Rado. I'm your host, Charlie Sennett. We hope you'll join us for the next episode of Ground Truth.